Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Logical Soul Talk. My name is Michael Craig, and I'm your host for this weekly talk radio program. This is a show where I either get to interview some of the best, brightest, and most creative people in the world, or talk about subjects near and dear to my heart. And welcome from Vero Beach, Florida. I'm talking to you live from my place here in Vero Beach on vacation. Today is my birthday, and my wife and I are enjoying a whole week of sun and surf and just sitting around doing much of nothing except this show and maybe reading a few books that I've been putting on hold for some time. At any rate, I wanted to check in with you and give you some really, really fascinating stuff. And at the end of this session, I want to give you a website or a URL where you can go and get a free gift. I want to share this with you since it's my birthday and my right to give away gifts instead of receive them. So I think giving is so much more fun in a way. So on my birthday, please feel free to accept this gift, and I'll give you that URL at the end of the show. Now, during this day, I will focus on a subject I find fascinating, and that is the logical soul and how it works. And the specific topic tonight is actually the first part of a five-part series, which I call Branding from the Soul, Turn Your Passion into an Avalanche of Cash. And the first subject of that is called Detoxing the Mind to Uncover Your Passion, or finding out, let's see, what was the notes that I had here? I'm going to have to get to my notes. Excuse me one second. I don't have a way to print out stuff, so when I make notes, I have to go to the website and look them up here. Huh, here we go. Okay, so what I want to do today is cover tactic number one, which is know where you are and where you really want to be. In other words, if you don't know where you are, how do you know where you're going? Because based on where you are, that's what you have to do to get to where you want to be. Now, I know that doesn't make a lot of sense. When you know who you are and where you are, finding out where you want to go becomes a little less complex. So today we're going to focus on really what is your passion, who you really are, how do you find your passion, how do you find where you are in relationship to that, because there's a whole lot of things that are going on in our minds and our emotions and our feelings that may be blocking that passion. And if it's blocking our passion and we're setting up a business that involves a whole lot of people contact or a whole lot of contact with customers, and this and that, and yet we're the bookworm types. We like to sort of go off to ourselves, and we're not really outgoing. That may be a mismatch. In other words, we may be engaging in some activities, some jobs, some business that we have no business being in, and it really doesn't have anything to do with our passion. And if we're just working for the sake of working, which predominantly 80% of the population out there is doing, then we're not going to be in touch with our passion, and consequently, the world is not going to give us what we want. We're not going to be getting the rewards from who we are. And even if we do, it's not going to be satisfying for us. We're going to be stuck in something that we really don't love. And that's where a lot of people go through their change of life or their midlife crises. And then they discover that they were doing all their life things they didn't love. And then suddenly they find out, you know, they're not living their passion, so their passion just sort of explodes and it becomes something like a second childhood where they start going a little crazy. What I want to do today is go over, and hopefully you're not going through that right now. If you are, then this show is particularly pertinent to you, and maybe I can shed some details or maybe some tactics that you can use. Let me just go over some of the notes I've made here on a book that I'm working on by the same name, Branding from the Soul, how to Turn Your Passion into an Avalanche of Cash. And essentially the first chapter goes into the question, and we hear this a lot, how are you? Now, when asked this question, an American usually respond, and I grew up an American, most of you probably did as well. Most Americans respond with, I'm fine, or I'm okay, or great, how are you? I'm married to a German, however, and I found out the Germans are a little different. They answer a little more precisely. When posed a question, how are you, most of them are deeply touched by the question, and they'll go out of their way to answer authentically. And if you pose this question, however, be prepared for the speaker to launch into a lengthy explanation about the state of his or her neck, chest, shoulders, arms, stomach, legs. Depending on the concern that he or she has, they will tell you in detail maybe about the other problems that keep them at night. Now, you don't want to really hear all this? Well, then don't ask a German how are you unless you really want to know. Now, what we're going to do in this session today or this talk today is ask you, well, how are you really? And it may be a little uncomfortable to Americans because we really don't like to dwell on things that make us feel uncomfortable, make us feel a little bit less perfect. And that's unfortunate because I think we're falling into what I call the McDonald's syndrome. And I really don't want to be bothered by much detail unless it affects us directly. Now, I will tell you that what I am talking about today, getting in touch with your passion, does affect you directly. However, because a lot of us don't see that, we don't spend the time necessary to find out who we really are. Let's just pretend that you do because you're tuning into the show, however, so I'm just going to give you what I have, and then you can take that and run with it if you so choose. Now, the McDonald's syndrome is what I call something that we treasure an idea that someone tells us what to do or someone will do it all for us. This means in our minds as Americans, they take away all of life's challenges, woes, fears, and uncertainties. And I'll give you some examples. We want watermelon without seeds. We want clean restrooms wherever we travel. We want our coffee never to burn us. We want roses without thorns. We want politicians to pass laws to take care of us. Honest, of course. We want health insurance to cover everything. We want to buy everything and not have to pay much for it. We want this, we want this, we want that. The fact of life is that life is full of uncertainties, and anybody who guarantees otherwise is either lying to you or getting ready to charge you a lot of money or control you, maybe in ways that you don't want to be controlled. For example, you want the government to pay for health care. Well, that's fine. That's a great idea, and it's very compassionate. However, also be prepared for the outcome, more government interference, more government intervention, and more control. Less control on your part means more control somewhere else. You want politicians to be more honest? Well, be prepared for more controversy. They're going to reveal ugly secrets and facts you don't really want to know about. The real problem with McDonald's syndrome, however I call it, is that it was created to solve physical, emotional, and superficial problems, but they go for the deep seed we have, which is ourselves. And Socrates, remember this guy in ancient Greece, Socrates taught by asking questions. And his method, in fact, was so powerful that it caused politicians in ancient Greece to demand that he be put to death or he kill himself drinking the hemlock. And this method is so powerful that the Socratic method, in fact, has survived to this day as the basis of scientific inquiry. So when you say know thyself, this is, in fact, the only way to know anything of any significance or importance. Pretty much all else is fluff. And I say that with utmost respect for anybody who's doing anything. But the point is that the Socratic method is a way of transformation, is a way of getting into the mundane, beyond the superficial, into ideas that will begin to supercharge us. Think of it as a form of digging for buried treasure. And the experience that you have lies a treasure trove of self-discovery. Now, if you know how to dig for it, that is. Now, I'll give you an example. I once subscribed to every conspiracy theory out there. And once I dug to the source, however, I discovered that I had a lot of anger. I discovered that a lot of this anger wasn't even mine. It was my father's, and it was his father's. And in fact, this led me to an ancestral search. I was searching for where all this anger and fear and stuff came from. And there was a whole lot of things that became uncovered because of that search. And I discovered a lot of what ancestors went through and what they thought, what they felt, we inherit. It was heavy stuff, but now this discovery has been transformed into something really good, a technique of showing others how to discover the same thing and transform their lives. So what problem exists in your life right now that that may have its origins in a deeper problem that affects your whole family or the society you live in, or your whole world. Which of your problems holds the key to unraveling the biggest solutions for, say, mankind or your neighbors or someone who's doing something similar to you or going through a similar problem? Now, only you can find that. And so discovering your passion is part of that search, part of that discovery process. And once you know yourself, however, that's the key. Once you know yourself, your passion is naturally revealed. It'll come out on its own. The key, therefore, is to know yourself, and that is the key to your passion. To give you another example, what's your personality type? Are you outgoing and a people person, for example? If so, chances of your passion being, say, archaeology is a little bit remote, unless, of course, you want to teach archaeology or you have your own feature show on the Discovery Channel where you take viewers along with you to the hidden, buried secrets of the people in Indonesia, say. Now, my friend and mentor, and I learned from Raymond Aron, who's my mentor. He has a great technique for discovering some of parts of your passion, and that is, he calls it the love letters. And the way it works, you can make a note here if you like, but I'll also have it as part of my book that's coming out, and you can also see it from the website logicalsoul.com, where you'll be able to see this and also touch base with the branding from the Soul Course, which I'll be having coming out soon, and I'll give you more details of that toward the end of the show here. Now, here's how it works. If you want to discover your passion, or here's an exercise you can do. Take out a sheet of paper. There's five steps I've got here. First one, set aside about 10 minutes to do the exercise. And I'm not suggesting you do it now because we've only got about 10 minutes left on the show. Well, maybe about actually 20 minutes. So don't do it now, but just write down the steps. And then later on after the show, you can take some time, sit by yourself, and do these exercises. If you're listening to the podcast, maybe this podcast and do exercises as we go. So either way, take the time to do this exercise. I think you'll find it very beneficial. First thing is to set aside about 10 minutes, 15 minutes or so to do the exercise. Then take out a sheet of paper or a pen and divide this sheet into three columns. And you want the left-hand column to be the widest. So maybe put a line down the middle, and then the two right on the right side of that line down the middle, divide that again into two. So you'll have three divisions, the widest being on the left. Now, the second part, this is going to require some rapid-fire questioning of yourself, or better yet, have a friend ask you the question over and over again about 5 seconds apart. And that question is very simple. What do you love? Now, when you hear that question, preferably someone, a friend or someone is a mate or someone is asking you the question, they'll say, what do you love? What do you love? It's about 5 seconds. In the left-hand column, one or two-word answer to that question each time it's asked. And don't give it much thought. In other words, these are spontaneous answers to a simple question. What do you love? Do the exercise quickly and spit out the first answer that comes to you. Once you have a list of maybe 24 answers or so, stop. So that's the second thing. So if you divide that column, or take that sheet of paper, divide it into three columns, the first column you put what do you love, answers to what do you love, just one or two word answers, and you just go one on top of the other, one down, the next line, the second answer, third answer, next line, so forth. Now the third step, and this would be in the second column, you're going to have three letters, H, M, or L. They stand for high, medium, or low. Okay, now depending on how strongly, this is after you've already gone through the exercise where you list all of your love. And you take let's see here. All right, so what you want to do is take a pen, and on the second column, list. Look at your loves and place a letter next to that in the second column, H, M, or L, depending on whether that love is strong. If they put an H for high, that's how you feel highly or strongly for that love. If your love is less strong but still important to you, put an M for medium. And for those, all the others, write down an L for low, if your love is only a passing fancy or something you can live without. Once you do that, and this will be on the final step, would be the fourth, would prioritize each of the H's and M's. And this would be the third column, the last column. You want to put a 1 next to the most important items and a 2 next to the second most important ones, et cetera, et cetera, 3 and 4 and 5, depending on the priority. If you can't decide on a few, the same number and keep going. The point here is not to get caught up so much in detail you miss the bigger picture. And then when you get done with that, then you go back and circle the top 5 or 6 highest priority items. You just take, now instead of doing it, circling the words themselves, you want to circle the numbers, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, et cetera. So you'll know where the numbers are on your sheet and you'll be able to relate to them. And the reason you're going to do this for the fifth step, I'm going to tell you about in just a second. But you go back and circle the numbers themselves, the 5 or 6 highest priority items. And these are the ones most closely related to your passion. Now, the fifth step would be to take this list and fold it in half. Fold it to where the last two columns are not showing anymore. In other words, you're just showing the list of your loves. And then you go to someone who knows you well, preferably a friend or spouse or someone you know well, an associate, and ask them to circle the item that he thinks that you love most. Now, that's an interesting twist because Raymond doesn't do this, by the way. This is something that I threw in the picture. But Raymond goes into the other parts very well, and it's very well done. You can go to monthlymentorreview.com if you want details on his program and to sign up for Raymond's thing. It's very, very good, and I highly recommend it. However, this fifth thing I added because I found that it's important to be able to see what others think of what you love. Now, it's not necessary that people agree with you, or it's not necessarily that they dictate to you what you love, obviously, but this is a way of feedback. It's a way of getting someone else to see whether or not you're selling them on what you love or whether you're hiding the idea of what you love or hiding the fact of what you love. So get them to circle the items, and this is only the items that are showing, the list itself. Get them to circle the items he or she thinks you love the most. And then next to the circle, put a 1, 2, 3, et cetera, for the ones that feel the most important priority-wise. And if they don't know, tell them to make a guess based on what they think you have. So you can do exercise, by the way, with as many friends and acquaintances as you like. Main thing is to give them each a list. Don't have one list passing through all of them, but make separate lists and give them each a list so they can circle that. And this last step, this fifth step, by the way, is to give you feedback as to how you come across to the world. And again, I added this to Raymond's formula since I find that many people are so influenced by external and internal factors, they simply lost any clue about what they really love or the priorities they are expressing to others. Now, once you get done with all of that, tally up the results and paint a picture of your loves. What are you really drawn to? What is the priority of that attraction? What do others see that you're drawn to? And the priority you exhibit. In other words, what are you showing to the world? If you did the exercise quickly, and where your priorities ought to be. Now, the love letter says shows you where you are. But how do you really get to where you want to be? Now, here are some scenarios, and I'll just sort of mention them to you, and you can go back and listen to this podcast if you miss a few, or you can take notes as we go along here. Now, there's 4 different scenarios, and I'll just throw them out to you. There's actually more than that, but I'll just throw out 4 of them as I see them, the more obvious ones. The first one is everything works out totally congruent. In other words, if your loves match the feedback from others and reflect most of what you're doing already, congratulations. You seem to be in touch with your passion, and you have a way of expressing it to others. And you'll have no problem with the other tactics that I'll share with you as far as branding from the soul, because this is actually the most important one. This is what gets you started. So if you're congruent with what you love and what you're doing and the way others see what you're doing and being your love, then you're on the right track and you're actually expressing that, and you're very powerfully on your way down the road. Now, that's a rare scenario, I'll be honest with you. The second one, B, if your loves reflect what you're actually doing, but others see you with different loves or priorities, You may be cut off from those who could serve you the most, for example, your customers, your employers, your friends, or family. And what I would suggest in that case is to allow more feedback into your life without feeling criticized or threatened. Feedback is a lifeline for you here, and it will be the most powerful tool you could use. And just not to tell you what to do, but to give you a way that you could so-called sell, quote-unquote sell, your ideas to others. Because without selling our ideas to others, we won't be able to get that avalanche of cash that I'm talking about in branding. So that's a crucial aspect. C, this is the third one. If your loves have little to do with your job or business, in other words, if you say you love something but not do it, assessment. In other words, you love things, and they say you love the same things, but you're not doing these things. Then the simple fact is, you need to change your job or get another business. If both you and others agree that you're wasting your time and your passion, then why waste your time or your passion? You need to spend more time discovering how to effectively start doing more of what you love and less of what you don't love. And D, the final analysis, is if your loves have little to do with either your job, your business, or how others see you, then there could be a couple of scenarios here. You're either a great actor, in other words, you're able to fool yourself and others, but essentially you're lying to yourself. It may take some digging to get you on the same page with your passion and to get that passion lined up with a business or a job that allows it to be expressed. Now, if the analysis reveals answers other than an A, the one where I told you, maybe undergo what we call a mental detox before you can truly discover and fully express your passion. And this passion, otherwise known as the seed of the soul, is also the key to your overall health and your well-being and happiness. Now, that exercise I just gave you, as I say, if you want to listen to the podcast and go over this and make notes and do that, I'll also have it in my book, Branding from the Soul, to where I'll outline these steps so where you can take them and do them at home in your spare time. It's very important to do, however, and it will give you a really understanding of where you need to start. Your passion, knowing what your passion is, the seat is the beginning of the search for branding from the soul, because if you're not in touch with your soul, others don't see that, and you're going to be not branding from the soul. You're not going to be selling who you really are. Now, I mentioned mental detox, and really, that doesn't really have anything to do with, I've struggled with the concept of using mental detox, because a lot of people hear the word detox, and they think, well, you know, we're going to go on a fast, or we're going to drink some yucky stuff, or whatever. And mental detox doesn't mean turning off the TV, for example, or throwing away your cell phone, or canceling your magazine or newspaper subscriptions. What it does mean, however, is that you have to gain an appreciation for and acceptance of the way life really is. That's it. The way life really is, and not as we would like it to be, fear it to be, or hope it to be. And this is one of the clearest ideas that I can share with you. The most important ideas I can share with you as far as branding from the soul. Because once you begin to accept life as it really is when you begin to really unfold your full potential, full passion, begin to live that and to share it with others. So when you rip away the need to know, and by the way, the need to know is a basic survival need, apparently. We have this thing which we call a living system, effectively, that runs our lives, that basically has already prioritized our life for us in this fight or flight reaction. When we're faced with danger, we either fight or we run away, comes into play. Now, one of the biggest things, one of the biggest fight or flight criteria is that we want to know. If we're faced with danger, uncertainty is the biggest enemy. If something's lurking in the shadows, if we're living in Africa, for example, something's lurking in the shadow, we don't know if it's a puma or a tiger or a lion or a rhinoceros, but we don't know what it is. It's helpful to know because we may have the wrong weapon to fight such a threat. And if we have the wrong weapon, we could easily die. And so the need to know has been basically a survival skill since day one. And the fact of the matter is we don't have that need to know as strongly now in many situations as we did, obviously, when we were in that fight or flight scenario. However, is a very strong part of who we are. And being able to let that go is probably the biggest skill, and it has to be a developed skill. It's not a natural skill, but something that we can learn to develop, and that is to drop away or drop off the need to know, simply because we find out that life is supporting us. We generally are alive. We generally do have enough breath to, you know, enough food to eat, enough water to drink, things of that nature. We're not going to die tomorrow, next week, in the next hour. So the need to know is a basic survival skill. Is not really necessary as much as it used to be. Now, it may be because our mind keeps going in that direction and we keep running that thought over and over and over again, but it's not necessary as it used to be. But yet letting it go, letting that need to know go, is probably one of the most powerful things we can do for our happiness. Ironically enough, the need to know interferes with our happiness. And so when we let go of the uncertainty, when we embrace, for example, the uncertainty and the paradox, which is the way life really is, we lose the need for self-deception and self-sabotage, because the need to know leads to self-sabotage and self-deception. When we have to know something, sometimes we come to conclusions. And there's been some studies done to show that anger, when we become very angry, we become most certain about things. We become sure that this is the way it is. My perception is the reality. And if you've ever been angry, particularly in a relationship, you know what I'm talking about. When we're angry, we have this feeling that we're right. The other person's wrong. That's a survival necessity. Because if we had doubts during periods of anger or fear, chances are we wouldn't have survived. As a caveman or a cavewoman, we probably wouldn't have survived in that situation. Now it's a little different. We don't need to know that. However, we're still running the same program. So when we enter the world of truth, letting the need to know go, then the joy and the self-assuredness and inner peace can dawn. Now, most of us don't know, or we can't see life as it really is. And the simple reason is emotions. We're guided by ancient survival decisions continuously that cloud our judgment. And that's all I'm going to say about that. But the point is that mentally detoxing is to get back and finding out what is at the root of the feelings that we're having. The point is that uncertainty is one of the biggest goals that we can embrace. Uncertainty, because if we can accept uncertainty, we can accept pretty much anything. And Nietzsche said, without a strong enough why, or with a strong enough why, we can overcome just about any how. And that's really the mental detox rule number one. Without a strong enough why, based on the basic survival need, we can create a why with a basic survival need. And that's part of what the branding from the soul goes into, that equates, or what I call piggybacks, our actual goals with survival need, so that we basically burn that into our consciousness, into our limbic system, to where the passion can actually drive our goals. And so once that begins to happen, we have the most power that we can ever have. And so it's not, and because basically willpower is not overcoming this survival decision. Willpower is the ability to embrace that and use that passion, use that power to drive our goals, to drive our passion, to drive our cash, for example. Because if we're going to have an avalanche of cash in our life, we have to be able to embrace that unknowing. We have to be able to embrace the idea that we don't know. And it's okay, because we go to the next step. Now, next week I'm going to go over. See if I get my notes here. The next tactic on branding from the soul, and that is turning failure decisions into success decisions. And I want to give you this free gift, by the way. Go to www.passiontocashvideo.com. There's a free video there. Passiontocashvideo.com. Craig, logical.